You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Today on the show, I want to talk about financial infidelity and talking about getting your spouse on board, how to recover from that, and then how to work to a common goal. And this is a theme that we've seen in the past, this question rise over and over again. How do I get my spouse on board? To help us with this, we have Talit from hisandhermoney.com, also the host of an incredibly popular podcast by the same name. He's joining us to share him and his wife Ty's story and this financial infidelity that they nearly started their marriage with. I cannot wait to jump into this. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. And yeah, this I've been looking forward to for a long time. What's interesting, I actually didn't tell you this, but one of my very first appearances ever on either YouTube or a podcast was on the His and Her Money show years ago, talking about travel rewards. So this is very cool to have Talit on our show now. They're just such an interesting couple. We saw them speak at FinCon and they just like blew the doors off the place. It was incredible. And I'm sure he's going to bring an equal amount of enthusiasm and knowledge, most importantly, to the Choose a Vi community. So with that, Talit, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, what's up? I am super excited to be here on the show. I am a fan of Choose FI. So this is a big deal for me, believe it or not.
Were you following this because you were kind of following Brad's travel rewards journey and you were seeing what he was up to? How did you end up hearing about our podcast, much less becoming a fan?
As Brad mentioned, he was on our show several years ago and he did educate us because prior to that point, we had no idea about travel rewards. We heard a little bit here and there, but we had never done a deep dive and he came on our show and we were like blown away, right? So we signed up he had a course. I mean, we were looking at it, but we never did anything with it. We weren't ready. You know, I just think we just weren't ready at that time. And, you know, just being in running through FinCon and I just kept seeing this name, Choose FI. And at first I didn't know who was behind it. And then I started listening and then I was like, man, that voice sounds familiar. So I dug into it. I was like, oh, that's Brad. And then, you know, I found out about Jonathan and then I've been listening ever since, you know, that's kind of where we are now. I think for a long time, especially when Brad and I and my wife first talked, we were in debt payoff mode. So just our focus was different. Since we've accomplished all that, now we're more so open to everything that, you know, and at that time, FIRE wasn't a big term that you heard a lot about. So, you know, as I dug more and more into the FIRE community, the more and more I heard about Choose FI, and I just been listening ever since.
And Talit, that's actually fairly interesting, right? Because you've been clued into the FinCon community for many, many years. But like you said, the FI community and the FI movement has really grown significantly over the last couple of years. I'd love if you just for a minute could talk about that, because I think we talk about to our audience, the FIRE is spreading, right? And this movement, it's palpable to us, but it's kind of cool to hear someone like you who's so intimately involved in the personal finance community now seeing this grow.
Yeah, I think we probably talked, that was probably 2015 or so. So then I probably only heard about Mr. Money Mustache when it came to FIRE. And, I would jump in there and read, to be quite frank, some of the stuff I was reading. I was like, I'm not doing that. That's too much.
And are you on the bike?
No, I'm not riding the bike at all. Some of it was cool. Some of it was extreme. It felt like, so, you know, I just kind of just put it in the back of my mind. I'm like, that's not really the focus right now. At that point we were in the throes of paying off our house. And that was really where all of our energy went. So I didn't really have time I wasn't really focused on all the aspects of FIRE, although, you know, what we did propelled us to be able to get to some of the things that are hallmarks within the FIRE community. We didn't know that at the time. And so, you know, I just kind of you know, peeked in and jumped out, peeked in and jumped out. And then the closer we got to our ultimate goal, our brain started shifting as to, you know, the next horizon. And so I think just our hearts became more willing to learn more. And by that time, there's fire, like you say, it spread, you know, it's Mr. Money Mustache and like a slew of people. And so I just had more, I started to hear more, I think, realistic versions. And so then it kind of got my ear and I found out about J.L. Collins and was really enjoying reading his stuff and read The Simple Path to Wealth. You know, it just kind of brick by brick, I just started, you know, digging into what the FIRE community was teaching.
Awesome, man. Well, I want to talk about this foundation. I want to talk about these debt payoff goals. But, you know, with your story, we can't start here. Your story starts with the total opposite of working together towards goals, working together to build a foundation. It starts with financial infidelity. Let's go back to that point in time.
Yep. So that is the foundation of our story, is the fact that we experienced financial infidelity during our engagement. We've been married almost 13 years now, but way back when we were engaged, we had a very long engagement, 2.5 years. Shortly after I proposed, I was in the military. And so I had to deploy to Iraq for a year. So that kind of pushed our plans back. But at the point where we were engaged, I was in kind of a transition, a phase of my life, meaning that prior to that point, I was very reckless with money. I had no sense of financial literacy. You know, I left home at 17. I was 17 when I enlisted into the military. And so I basically had to grow up in the military and I had to learn about money and figure things out, bump my head, and I bumped my head hard. And I made every wrong choice you can make. Payday loans, financing cars, financing the sound system in the car. You know, I had paint jobs that were customized and it just a bunch of young, foolish things. And so by the time you fast forward to the point where I'm 25 and I'm engaged now, I was at a place that I was tired of being in a cycle, destructive financial cycle. And I was working my way to understanding money more by reading books and reading articles and watching certain television shows that were geared toward personal finance. But I still had the consequences of my earlier decisions. And I was way, way deep in debt, over $30,000 of debt. And it wasn't nothing good to show for. It's not like I went to college and got a student loan. It wasn't like real estate. It was just dumb debt. It was cars and loans and payday loans and just a bunch of bad decisions piled on top of each other. And so I fall in love with a person that is completely the opposite financially. She had never been in debt. She had perfect credit. She paid her way through college. She was working in finance. She had a finance degree. So here I was, a financial wreck, about to marry a financial rock star. So for me, I was like, man, I cannot tell her about this debt, because if I do, she is going to run the other direction. And that's how I rationalized it in my mind.
This is writing itself out like a movie script. It's starting like a Hallmark movie, but you can tell it's about to turn into an action flick when she kicks her tail.
Yes. So I tried to devise a plan. Oh, well, maybe I can pay this debt off before we get married and I won't have to come into the marriage being a burden to the marriage from a financial standpoint. And so I tried to do all that, but of course it didn't work because God's not going to let you build anything on a shaky foundation. So I couldn't build a solid marriage on a lie. And so all my plans failed. And so several weeks before we were to get married, I confessed. She lost it. She was mad. She was hurt. Rightfully so. And it wasn't necessarily the dollars and cents. It was the trust. I broke her trust. She didn't know she could trust me. That was the big problem. It wasn't the money. The money can be fixed. Money can be made. Money can be lost. But trust is something that once it's broken, it's hard to put back together. So we had to do a whole lot of praying and we had to do a whole lot of talking and a whole lot of being transparent. And we eventually decided that, yes, we should still get married.
So up until that point, had you guys ever talked about finances? Was this like you had and still and you hid the debt all that time?
Yes, we did all the right things. We're a faith-based couple. You know, we're Christian. And so we went to the premarital counseling with our pastor.
You wrote a budget.
we did it all, man. We pulled credit and, you know, she did the right thing. She asked all the right questions and I had a bunch of lies to answer them. And I just was trying to just deflect and came up with answers that weren't true because I was in the midst of my own little plan, trying to get rid of the debt so she'll never have to know. And then, like I said, my plans failed and the truth had to come out.
Do you remember what that conversation actually looks like? Like, how did you bring this up to Ty? I can only imagine like how fear inducing that is, but you have to have the conversation. What does that look like?
Terror. Because again, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose her. I'm flat out like, okay, well, this is it. Here it goes. But for several days, I didn't know what to do. I knew I had to tell her, but I didn't want to tell her because I didn't want to lose her. I got to the point to where I knew I could not go another day. And so I was staying at my parents' house because I had transitioned. I was stationed in Texas, and then I got transitioned to Chicago, which is where we're from. We had a place, but she was staying in, and I was staying in my parents' house because we were, like I said, we were only going to get married in just a few short weeks. And I remember I called her over. I brought her into the room that I was in, and I just told her. I can still see it as I'm saying it. I can still play it. It's something I will never forget. One of the lowest days of my life because I had let down the person that I loved the most. And I had hurt her deeply, cut her real deep. And everything that she thought that she was about to get into, like as far as our marriage and the life that we were going to build afterward, it was a bunch of question marks now from that moment because of my lies and the decisions that I made.
But Talat, trust needs to be repaired, right? And it needs to be repaired day by day. So, I mean, it sounds like you guys did get over this and obviously you move forward, you got married, right? Which is wonderful. But talk me through those first couple of days, weeks, months. What do you personally do to help repair that trust? And then how do you move forward financially?
I think it was important. The process that she explains a lot when we teach is that she had to look at the whole picture of who I was. That debt was an aspect of me. It wasn't the totality of me as a man, as a person. And once she just took a step back to see who I was, the type of person that I was working hard. I wasn't lazy about it. You know, she realized like, oh, is this why he got another job? Because I had a day job and I was delivering pizzas at night. I was reading books. She saw it. I was asking questions. She was answering them. And so she saw that what I was saying as far as me wanting to change was real. And so she saw that I didn't want to be the same person that I was and that I was taking steps to improve. And so that helped her to see the bigger picture. Like, yeah, I messed up and I should not have lied to her. I should have been honest. But there's also these other things that he does well. He's always, you know, this is from her point of view. He's always treated me like a queen. He always makes sure that we're provided for. Like he's an upstanding man. And this was a big mistake that he made, but it's not who he is. And so once she was able to kind of get that revelation, we were able to come together and talk about it. We were able to talk about everything. How did I get in this financial mess? Like who exactly do I owe? Like what exactly is going on? And from there, we were able to start to build a plan of attack together. What the big thing for us was her willingness, one, to forgive, two, her willingness to tackle this with me. At no point after that was it about, well, this is your debt, you go figure it out. It was, okay, well, this is our situation. This is our debt. We're going to figure out a plan how we can get through this together. And from there, we started building the plan of debt payoff.
That's awesome. And I love how you're saying we. It indicates that you guys are, if not actually combining your finances, you're certainly looking at it all together. And I love your thoughts on that, like exactly at a tactical level. But I also want to say, just for our audience, just to set the frame here, one of the things that you had going for you was that you were on board. You were on the team. Now, you had brought baggage to this marriage. You were starting with debt that Ty didn't know about. And she had to grapple with that and look at the totality of your person and say, yes, this. But she said yes because you were on the team. You were working your tail off to fix this situation. But wow, for it to be inside the fold, for you guys to be working on this common goal together, that was redeeming, not just for you, but for you as a couple. And the reason I want to point that out is because it's a theme that's carried you guys through the past 13 years. you're working on these common goals together, and it's almost more powerful because of where you came from. And with that in mind, what does it look like for you inside the fold? She's now aware of your total financial picture. What did it look like for you guys to start combining your finances as a married couple?
Well, it was incredibly encouraging, one, to be forgiven, and then two, for her to be so determined, like, we're going to get through this. We can figure this out. Because for me, it felt hopeless. It felt like a hopeless situation. Like, man, I'm trying everything and nothing's working. And she looked at it like, you know, yeah, we can do this. And it was an immediate boost of confidence. Like, you think so? Like, for real? And so I had a heart to hear, because this was her background. She went to school for finance and she was helping people as a career with their finances. And so I was very receptive to the plan that she was coming up with. And it had its pros and its cons. So what that looked like was, you know, we decided that we were going to go through the process together. So that meant that not only from a dollars and cents, a budgeting, a looking at credit, a paying off debt, but also in the sense of growing together. So like, we would read money books together. We would send each other money related articles. We would watch money related television shows. You know, back then you had the Susie Ormans and you had Dave Ramsey, you had Michelle Cinquetary from the Washington Post. You know, they were on television at that time. And so we were able to watch these shows and have a discussion afterwards. And we would talk about how it relates to us, or, you know, one day we're going to do that, this, that, and the other. One day we're going to be on the Susie Orman show and she's going to grade us and we're going to get a good grade. You know, we allowed ourselves to not only focus on now, but where we want to go.
Susie, I want to purchase a Gucci handbag. Can I afford it? No.
Right. And so all of that was encouraging. And so we were growing together, but as we were working the plan together. And I think both of those are important. A lot of times when we talk money, we want to focus so much on numbers, and it's called personal finance because the personal aspect comes first. The character, the behavior, the mentality, like all those factor into your ability to achieve financial freedom, financial independence. It's not just how much money you make and how much are your expenses, how much you're investing, how much you're saving. Those are important too. But I think we attacked every aspect because this was new for me. I didn't know this stuff. I knew a lot of things. I didn't know this. And so to be able to start to understand money, man, that was like water in the desert for me, because I for so long felt intimidated by personal finance. You turn on Fox Business and it's just like, what are all those little things going across the bottom of the screen? Like, what are they talking about? And it can feel intimidating to the point that you just kind of throw up your hands. And so as I began to get it, it was encouraging. And when I got encouraged, I wanted to work harder and I wanted to get it done.
That's really awesome. Yeah. And you're describing this as truly personal finance, right? And behaviors and habits. And I wonder, looking back, so I mean, it sounds like the initial spark was this information and feeling comfortable. Where did you guys go from there? Like, what were the behaviors and habits that really worked for you personally as a couple? Because like you said, it is personal, right? So some things that would work for you might not work for us, but I'd love to hear like those couple things that stick out, you know, 13 years later that really worked.
Probably the biggest tool came from one of the books that we read together, which was by Elizabeth Warren, who's now a politician, but at that time she was a professor, and she wrote a book with her daughter called The Two Income Trap. And because we read that book during our engagement, we understood that the best thing that we could do was to not build our life based on two incomes. Although we had two incomes, we said, you know, based on the information that was in that book, we didn't want to feel trapped. And so out the gate, we built our life based on one income, my income. One of the things my dad always taught me, and he reiterated right before I got married, was, if your wife wants to work outside their home, encourage her, be there for her, be a cheerleader for her, but never make her feel like she has to work outside the home. So we made the decision to build our life, meaning our bills, everything should fit in my income, because one day you might not want to work outside the home. And then if that becomes the case, which it actually did, we won't get hurt. And so because we made that personal decision, we were able to use our one income to live off of and the other income to attack debt. And then later on, we use that to build wealth. So we use the live on, you know, half your income method, however you want to phrase it. And that was probably the biggest weapon, along with, you know, behavior change. Like, I was big time spender on dumb stuff, clothing, music, you know, just frivolous stuff. And I had to end that. I had to change my mind and start to allow myself to zoom out and see where I'm trying to go with finances so that I made the right decisions day to day with money so that we could get to the goal.
I would love to. I mean, honestly, it's going to take me some additional time to unpack that, and we'll have to save that for another episode. But I think it's worth pointing out, both to you as a response, but also to Brad, that that book, The Two Income Trap, had a really big impact on me as well. And frankly, I had forgotten about it long before I had ever heard of Elizabeth Warren, the politician. I read that, and that same idea that you build a life that's requiring two income, you're comfortable, but with two incomes, it's a trap, you know, it's a trap. And, you know, I just thank you for bringing that up, just because it's true. It just makes sense. You think about it for 10 seconds and you're like, wow, yeah, this can lead to some unfortunate consequences, because it may not always stay that way, right? If a lifestyle is based on two incomes, it inherently is more risky than one that's based on one.
And still, I recommend that book to this day. And I read it over a decade ago. And I still, whenever somebody comes to me, especially if they're about to get married, I'm like, read this book, because it was that impactful for us.
You know, one of the things that's so impressive about your story and about this kind of guiding light that we just talked about is the fact that you were able to live off of one income. Had, you know, not that you were necessarily doing it on day one, but it gave you some significant options. And you guys, at some point, I believe, in fact, relatively recently, I watched your video on YouTube where you were celebrating actually paying off your mortgage. And I think our audience would be very interested in that story just because of how quickly you did it and the fact that you were able to pull it off on a single income.
Yeah, for sure. So you fast forward in our story. So we are now consumer debt free. We actually paid off all of our consumer debt, that debt that was all mine. We paid it off in our first year of marriage. And then several years later, we bought a home. And we, by that time, we were very, very wise with our money. We understood money a whole lot better. And so one of the things that we knew was that we were not going to be waiting 30 years, not even 15 years to be paying off our home. We knew that no matter if you took a 15 or a 30, but if you waited it out, you were still paying for that house almost twice over. And we determined within ourselves that we would never make a minimum payment on our mortgage from day one. And as we were going through the process and we found the home and we were closing on the home, my wife, she made a, you know, because we are goal setting people. We understand the power of goal setting and goal achievement. And so she's like, you know what? I want to pay our house off in 5 years. Now, at this point, we are no longer a two income family. Like you just mentioned, when our second daughter came, my wife elected to leave corporate America and come home and raise our kids. So now we're a one income family. And she makes this bold declaration, like, we're going to pay our house off in 5 years. So on the exterior, being a good husband, I was like, yeah, we are going to do that. You're right. On the inside, I'm like, how in the world are we going to pay off our house in 5 years? You know, inside, I'm doing calculations in my brain. I'm like, that would mean we have to pay this much off every year. That would mean we would have to pay off this much every month. Where are we going to get that money from? And so it was a faith move. At that moment, all we could muster up was an additional $20 principal payment on top of our minimum payment.
And can I clarify, so the current track that you're on is for what, 15 years or 30 years?
So we got a 30-year mortgage.
Just to make sure I'm understanding this right. You got a 30-year mortgage and you're saying, I'm going to pay it off in 5 years. All right, let's do this. Okay, we have an extra $20 we can put toward this. That's where we're starting from.
Because this was an interesting season for us. We were in the midst of several transitions. Number one, our third child was born shortly thereafter. So she was like 7-8 months pregnant while we were getting this house. I was also transitioning jobs. I literally was starting a brand new job the same time that we were moving into a house. And, you know, it just bought it. We had to buy a van now because we got three kids instead of two. So it was just a whole lot of newness going on. And that was all, you know, from a budgeting standpoint, because, you know, like I said, new job. This, we didn't know how much these bills were going to be as far as utilities and stuff, because, you know, it's a bigger house. And we had a lot to figure out. So we knew that all we could do right now is put an extra $20 every month. And so that's what we did, because we wanted to put something towards our goal. We didn't want to just say it and not take any action toward it. And so that's what we came up with, an extra $20. But the more we went into the process, the more creative we got. And when it was all said and done, we paid off our house in 5 years, literally 5 years to the day from the day that we closed on our house. We walked into the bank with our children dressed up. My son had on a tie. My daughters had on had on dresses. We walked into that bank 5 years to the day and make that last mortgage payment.
That is absolutely amazing. And from starting from only paying $20 extra, I wonder if you had ran the numbers at that point and said, okay, in order to pay this off in 5 years, we have to pay like double the mortgage. It's probably something not all that far from that. I don't have the calculator in front of me, but instead of getting overwhelmed, you said, we're going to get creative. That was a word that just jumped out to me. I'd love to hear about that creativity. What did you guys do to get from here to there in 60 months?
So we made it our whole focus. Like I kind of referenced to it earlier, this was all we focused on. And so we looked around this house and we sold everything that we could, that we weren't using anymore. We also did a bunch of side hustles, things like mystery shopping. We would flip things from thrift stores. We would have all kind of garage sales. One thing, again, kind of along the same lines of what we learned about the two income trap, although we didn't have two incomes anymore, what we did was we locked our lifestyle, our expenses at a certain number. And so even as raises came, even as, you know, tax refunds and bonuses came, our lifestyle didn't move. And we always acted like we didn't get those raises. What would literally happen would be, if I got a raise, we would literally call our lender and set up an auto draft of that money to be added as an additional principal payment. Every dollar that we could squeeze out of our budget and every extra dollar that we could find through side hustles, we threw it at the debt. We didn't bring it home. Like I said, we pushed off a lot of things just to focus on paying off our home. Because once we said it, we was like, it's no turning back. And that little seed, that $20 seed, it was a psychological booster because we backed up our words. We said we would never make a minimum mortgage payment and we never made a minimum mortgage payment. And just psychologically, it just lit a fire. Okay, like what else can we do? Oh, we can try this. We could. I heard about this mystery shopping. Let's research it. Let's do it. I heard about we would go get, for example, thrift store. We would go to and get furniture that is categorized as mid-century modern. And so we would go find it at a thrift store and it wouldn't be in the best shape. So I had to learn woodworking a little bit, learn how to fix it up, repair it, shine it up. So I could buy it for $50, you know, not in the best shape. And I could fix it up and then sell it for $300, $400. And so all that profit would go toward the mortgage. And it just, once you experience, you know, seeing those numbers go down, you just automatically start asking yourself questions like, what else can I do? And you start to figure things out.
I think that you're hitting on a few of the things that I was really curious about. And that was, which side of the coin did you tackle with the most intensity? Was it the, you know, if the equation is what you earn minus what you spend is equal to the difference of the gap, you're starting out with a gap of about $20 and you're able to move this up to the point where you're essentially sending double mortgage payments. And part of that is spend less, but you only have so many golf clubs in your garage. And then the other half is we can make more. And in theory that, you know, there's no real cap on what that is. And it sounds like you guys were willing to do all sorts of things. So side hustles with the mystery shopping, side hustles, the flipping of the furniture. Was there anything else that you talked about to really move the needle on the income side?
I continued to get raises. That was a big deal because, I mean, they would come $5,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 at a time. But again, we just acted like we never got it. And because we were setting it up on auto and because we were doing things like biweekly payments, all these things were just literally murdering the interest. And so it just snowballed. You know what I mean? It just, every time we added on, it was like the hammer was getting bigger. And so, you know, it just started to really, really speed the process up.
So, all right, this is absolutely amazing. You paid off your mortgage in 5 years when probably at month zero, it seemed very unlikely if you were being 100% honest with yourself. But you guys came together as a team, right? Which is what you did when you were engaged and you were first married. Sure, there was a financial infidelity, but you came together as a team. That's what I would say is my biggest kickstarter, I guess, on my path to FI is the team I have with my wife, Laura. And I'd love to hear you talk about that teamwork you have with your wife, Ty, and any kind of actionable advice, because I know you talk to couples through your various platforms. What advice do you give to help people move forward as a team?
I think it's important to understand that word, because that word team can be tricky. It can feel a certain way to certain people, depending on your background and what you think a team should look like. And for a lot of people, when you hear the word team, you think you do have, I do have. But if you just really zoom out for a minute and think about whatever team you want to think about, whether it's a football team, a hockey team, a baseball team, very rarely do you see everybody doing equal shares on that team. A lot of times there are people doing shouldering more of the load than others. You know, not too long ago, Tom Brady just won his 6th Super Bowl. And that was a team effort. It wasn't just all Tom Brady. It was a lot of people doing a lot of things. And so when the concept, if you apply it to marriage, us in particular, what we had to realize was everything ain't going to be 50-50, but it has to be us doing it together. And so a big mistake we made up front at the very beginning, when after we got past the infidelity and we started to make a plan of attack together, I had the bright idea to say that since you know money well, you do this for a living, why don't you handle our finances and you just let me know what I can spend and what I can't spend. We'll just do it like that. The problem with that was Ty was doing all the work and I wasn't involved at all. And so what happened was we were both beginning to build resentment towards each other, but neither one of us was voicing it. I was building resentment because I felt like a child being handed an allowance. She was saying, well, you have this much to spend this month. And I knew how much I made for a living versus how much she was saying I could spend. And it just didn't add up. And why didn't it add up? Because I wasn't involved. She was getting frustrated because she was doing all this work, making this plan of attack and setting the budget and creating and moving numbers around. And she felt as though I wasn't appreciating her hard work. So the problem was, although we say we were going to do this together, we weren't doing it together. She was doing 100% of the work and I was doing zero. So again, I had to get involved. And the way we teach it is like this. We're from Chicago. So back in the 90s, it was all about the Chicago Bulls. They won 6 championships during that time. And if I say, hey, who knows who Michael Jordan is? Everybody's going to raise their hand and say, yeah, Mike, the greatest of all time. By the way, there's no debate as to who's the greatest basketball player of all time. They'll say, yeah, LeBron. Michael Jordan. Now, who?
I didn't hear him. I don't know.
But then if I come back to that same crowd or to that same person and say, like, who knows who BJ Armstrong is? Like, very few people are going to know who BJ Armstrong is. But if you go back and look, for several of those teams, BJ Armstrong was the point guard while Michael was the shooting guard. And they both had a part to play. Now, when it came to the backcourt, they were both in the backcourt, but BJ Armstrong didn't have to shoulder the same weight that Michael Jordan had to shoulder. Other coaches weren't game planning for BJ like they were MJ. But BJ had an important part to play as the point guard. He was the general. He was calling the plays, setting up the floor. And, you know, Mike did his thing. Now, what was important for them to be able to become champions was both of them playing to their maximum ability. They both played their roles to their fullest potential. In a marriage, it's important that if you all want to accomplish greatness together, you both have to be involved, but you both have to play to your strengths. If you're not the numbers person, don't be sitting there trying to force them to become an Excel PhD. You know what I mean?
My wife still doesn't get excited about Roth conversion ladders. What's wrong with her?
That's it, though. But that's it. There's a part that she plays, right, that keeps you going. So Ty is the number. I'm not the numbers person. Ty is. I can do it. I can set up a budget. I have no problem doing it. But it's her thing. It's her gift. And so she still sets the numbers up. She still moves and shakes on that area. But now the difference is instead of me just sitting back and waiting to hear the results, the final results, no, I get involved. I say, well, what's this for? Oh, did you remember this? Do we need to spend more here or less there? And then after we both go back and forth and communicate, we both make the final decision as to what our plan is for the month. So for everybody that's married, again, don't try to make your spouse into you, because that would be boring if there were two of you. It's important that you all both identify what you all are good at and do that. If you have to shoulder more, if you have some teams look 80-20, Every team doesn't look 50-50. Whatever the percentage is, as long as both of you all are involved, you both have the same information, then you both can execute the same plan together. But it's important to don't be like we were in the beginning where it was 100-0, because that's not a team. You both have to play a part, no matter if one's role is bigger than the other, or if, you know, in certain situations where you both are 50-50, but you both have to have that team mentality in order to move forward. And so we teach people all kinds of things. Like for us, again, we started out, the only reason we were able to begin our journey was through prayer. We were at a low point that we could not get ourselves out of. And so we're faith-based people. And so we pray together and we found strength through that. You know, it's important that you go from there to now that you all are committed to each other, whatever that looks like for you, whether you're a faith-based person or not. Now it's important for you all to identify why. Why do you want to set this goal of debt freedom or financial independence? Why? You can't just look at the what. We know we need to invest this much in this vehicle, or we need to pay off this amount of debt. No, that's the what. But why? Why is that important? You all need to take time to dream together, to look at what do you want your life to look like 5 years from now. We tell couples to take your last name and put INC behind it. So for us, our last name is McNeely. So the question is, what do we want McNeely Incorporated to look like 5 years from now? You have to treat your household finances like companies do. The only reason companies stay in existence is if they remain profitable. The only way they remain profitable is if they are diligent with the comings in and goings outs of their finances. And you all as a couple, as a family, need to do the same way. So you need to have that business-like mentality and say that McNeely Incorporated is going to do X, Y, and Z in the next 2 to 5 years. Okay, if that's the goal, now it's time to backwards plan. Now we've established our why. It's because we want to travel more. It's because we want to create a financial legacy for our children. It's because we don't want to ever experience what it feels like to be in the bondage of debt ever again. Now that you've identified your why, now you need to talk about goals. Okay, this is why we're doing it. Now, what's our goal? We know we need to get out of debt. How long do we want to take to get out of that debt? And you start to talk it out again, back and forth. Value each other's opinion. I think that's super important too, to know that even if you're the numbers person and your spouse isn't valued, and make them feel valued, because if they feel valued, they're going to have more buy-in to everything that needs to be done. And so I think those are three important steps that have nothing to do with dollars and cents, because you have to lay a foundation before you can start talking about draperies and roof shingles. You have to make sure that the foundation that you set is solid. So those three things will get you there.
Awesome. You know, last time I saw you in person, you were on stage giving a keynote at FinCon. It was amazing. You were talking about impact, and it's clear to me. I mean, you started out, you're a 25-year-old kid with $30,000 in debt that you're still a little bit terrified that, you know, you need to tell your fiance that this is happening so you can work through this. And now fast forward a decade and you're reaching tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people with your platform. You're inspiring people all around the world. And I'm curious, you've paid off your mortgage. You've reached an incredible level of financial success. What is your why moving forward?
Well, our why is still the same. We're trying to create a legacy for our children. We didn't come from a legacy of wealth. We want to create a legacy of wealth for our children. My parents, when they retired, they actually paid their house off. Now we've paid our house off. So our children have the ability to be the third generation of McNeely's to attack mortgages and live in mortgage-free situations. So we want to create a financial, you know, dynasty, so to speak. So, you know, we've done an aspect of that in get rid of the debt. And now our focus is on wealth building. So we're going to dive into real estate, and we're going to, you know, ramp up investing into the market. And so now our goal is to just create this legacy that lasts for generation after generation of McNeely's after us.
So Tyler, we've been talking about family, right? And family finances, but really on a nuclear family level. And I'm curious if there's any interplay with the larger family. So you talked about your parents, and they sound like amazing role models, but do other members of your family, do they come to you for advice? Do you talk finances now that you guys are who you are? Talk us through that, because I think people are interested, certainly in the FI community. Like, we know where we want to go financially, but sometimes we feel awkward talking about money with our extended family.
That's not going to change, guys. you all will continue to feel awkward, okay? Because we're in the minority. That's just the way it is. So do we talk? Yes. Do they listen? Barely. So we've kind of learned to be okay with that. I think at one point, especially when you're first experiencing change that is so beneficial to you, like it's so amazing to you that you want to tell the world, and you especially want to tell your family because you want them to feel it too. And then when they don't have that enthusiasm, it can be such a downer. And so we understand that now, that everybody won't get it. Now, does it stop us from trying to be a help? Absolutely not. We still try to help. We still try to encourage. We still, you know, when we come across some information, we still share it, but we have a firm understanding that it might not stick. And we really hope it does, but we understand that it might not. And we've just resolved in ourselves to be okay with that. We've learned to let our life speak louder than our words. So when we were in the midst, in the throes of this thing, you know, people had jokes and, you know, people would question us and our decisions. Then when it happened, it's like, how did you do that? Tell us how to do it. And so, you know, you just got to live. You just kind of have to live what you're saying and still encourage people and still, you know, try to share the information, but also understand that you are in the minority. And quite frankly, that our world isn't set up for the FI community. It's set up for consumerism. You scroll on your phone, you're going to get ads. You turn on the TV, you're going to get ads. You go on your desktop, you're going to get ads because ads work. You're going to open your mailbox. They're going to encourage you to spend at your favorite stores, and you're going to do it. It's just not set up for financial stewardship. It's not set up for financial independence. And so because of that fact, because you've been fortunate and blessed enough to have some realizations and to put in the work and position yourself towards financial independence, don't think that, you know, everybody's going to get it right away, because quite frankly, most of us didn't get it right away. Some of us did. Some of us came out the womb with calculators, but most of us didn't.
Brad Barrett. sorry. I have this dry cough. It just won't leave.
But for most of us, unlike Brad, you know, we had to get to this place. We had to get to this level of understanding. So give people grace to have their own journeys. Don't stop. Don't ignore them. Don't shun them. But also understand that they are on their own journey as well.
So, all right, maybe not coming out of the womb, right? But second generation FI, that's something we talk about here a lot. And we're talking about family. Let's talk about kids for a minute. So I want to go back to that day where you guys went as a family in to pay off that mortgage. And I, you know, I'm picturing it. As you said, everybody's all dressed up.
It's on the internet, Brad. You can watch it.
Oh, man, that's awesome. But right, we'll send you the link. That's so cool. Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes. So, I mean, this is an event, right? And I can picture it, and obviously we can see it, but I want to know, what did you tell your kids?
We told them that today was a big day. That's it. We just told them today was a special day and you got to get dressed up. We'll tell you the surprise when we get there. Now our kids are small, 9, 7, 5. And so we just told them, we're going on a trip, get dressed, put on your good stuff, and we're gonna have a big day today. And so we took them to the bank. They're familiar with the bank because they have savings accounts. So we teach them little lessons like that, like when they get birthday money and things of that nature. They have accounts that they can deposit money into. So they weren't unfamiliar with the bank. So we took them in there, and you know, we told them, hey guys, listen, this is the thing. And you'll see that on the video, like when we tell them and their reaction again, because they're small. And so we said, like, today is it. You know what we just did? We just paid off our house. And they go, yay. And then my son, he's like, so what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't get it, but they got it. Like, they knew it was a big deal. And so we took the time to say that this is something that rarely people do, that they can say that they own their home, that not only does the lender know. When we got home that night, like, our account literally said 0.00. A couple weeks later, we went to the county and we got the paperwork that said that we own the house. We own our house. Like, it's just power in that statement. We went from a homeowner to the owners of our home. There's a difference. And so when we had that moment with them, it was, and that's another reason we documented it, is because they are small. And so this will be something that they get to look back on. Like, that's a historic day for the McNeely family, not just for Tyler and Ty McNeely, for, you know, our grandchildren will be able to watch that. Like, this is the day that the trajectory of our financial legacy changed because of what our grandparents, Tyler and Ty, did. And it'll just be a moment in time encapsulated forever. And so that was one of the biggest motivating factors for us for those 5 years. Now, we're talking about, by the time it was all said and done, we paid $330,000. And again, one income, you know, a bunch of side hustles, a bunch of things all mixed together, but $330,000 in 5 years. That is something that nobody can take from. When we pull up to this house, like some people say, man, you could have invested your money, and they want to go calculator on me. I'm like, bro, you cannot put this feeling that I have inside of a calculator when I pull up to this house every day, knowing that this is my house. And so it's just a moment that I'll never forget. Our family will never forget. And it's just a legacy building moment that we are super grateful to be on the other side of.
Well, I tell you what, I think Jonathan and Brad have chills. We're cheering for you, standing clap. I suspect the FI community at large right now hearing this, your story for the first time, regardless of how you feel about that, is giving you a standing ovation. That is incredible. And Tout, you know, on most shows, this would be the end of the episode, but on this show, we would love to give you the chance to tackle the hot seat. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Talat, question number one, your favorite blog that's not your own?
Favorite blog, I would go with Making Sense of Sense. Her articles are always super detailed and super informative, always keep me on my toes.
Awesome. Well, question number two, your favorite article of all time? Now, this can be one that you wrote or someone else's.
It's not going to be mine at all. I'm not a fan of me. No. probably if I can go more than one, it would be the stock series, J.L. Collins stock series on his blog.
Yeah, that's funny because I literally was just talking to someone at my daughter's swim practice. I sent him the stock series. He was asking how to invest. How do you do this for the long term? And I just said, I can't give you anything better than what Jim says here. This is brilliant.
Wow, he did it already. Just do this.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. All right, question number three, your favorite life hack?
I think it's the living off one income. I think it was such a huge game changer, not only from a dollars and cents standpoint, but from a mentality standpoint. You know, we applied that same mentality when we got down to one income. We didn't live off the entirety of that whole income. So I just think it just positions you to be able to have so much strength and so much flexibility with your finances.
All right. Question number four, your biggest financial mistake?
Well, I made so many of them. That's a difficult question there, Jonathan.
How to choose.
So I think probably my biggest is the hiding of the debt from my soon to be wife. You know, it was one of the biggest mistakes of my life, not just financially, because I was trying to start my marriage off with a lie. And so that was huge. I would say that withholding that information from her was the biggest.
Let me ask you a question, you know, and you may have to think through this or it may just be obvious, but I was thinking financial mistake, but maybe not a life mistake. I wonder if you hadn't had that, and more importantly, if you hadn't had that confession and that following reconciliation, if you would have the passion, you know, 13 years later that you do now. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I think I would have, because it was such a long journey. Like, that was the tail end of the journey. I knew that I didn't know. And so it was always bugging me that I needed to figure money out. Like, I didn't get that lesson, and it was frustrating me, and I just could not figure it out. And I know that eventually I would have. That sped the process up because there was this sense of urgency, but that desire was in me, and eventually that itch would have got scratched.
All right. Question number five, the advice you would give your younger self?
The advice I would give my younger self would be to not be afraid of risk. I know that I could have made a lot wiser decisions with money earlier in my life that would have allowed me to achieve some things much sooner. For example, I could have bought a 4-unit, I could have house hacked before house hacking was a thing. I'm talking like 2002. You know, I had the opportunity to do a house hack, but I was afraid because, again, I was acquiring knowledge. I wasn't like solid in my understanding, but there was a chance there I could have done that. I could have really set myself up for some financial well-being early. And I was just too afraid to pull the trigger on that deal. So I would have told myself, do it. Don't be afraid.
All right. Now we do have a bonus question for you. What purchase have you made over the past 12 months that has brought the most value to your life?
Wow. That's a good question. My mind immediately goes toward a course that I bought that is related to our business that helped me to understand some stuff that I could not figure out on my own. That was frustrating me to no end. And then after walking through the course, I got it. And it was very beneficial for the work that we do with our company.
Adding to the talent stack. Talat, this has been amazing. I know I personally have gotten so much value from hearing your story, and I'm sure many people in our audience are going to want to find out more about what you and Ty have been doing. What is the best way to connect with you and to connect with your content?
Well, you can check out our podcast, The His and Her Money Show, or you can come directly to our website, hisandhermoney.com. All of our podcasts are there. All of our video teachings are there. All of our written articles are there. All of our social media handles, our books, our courses, everything you need. We have it right there at hisandhermoney.com.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, and keep doing the good work that you all are doing.
Wow, Brad. I know so many people in our community take the time and nitpick whether or not you, maybe including you, you might even be guilty of this. Should I pay off my mortgage? Should I not pay off my mortgage? And I don't care where you fall in the spectrum. No one can listen to their story and think that this is either a financial mistake or a life mistake. There is zero chance they will look back on this at any point in time and regret this decision. How incredible.
Yeah, that was amazing. And you're right. People quibble over the math of it, but wow, how powerful is it psychologically to pay off your mortgage first? And second, in their case, to have this goal and to complete it on the day, right? The fifth year to the day. If you can do that, you can do anything, especially if you're starting only paying off $20 extra a month. I mean, this story is just incredible. And like you said at the end there, the legacy for the next generation, for generations to come, it's just such a big deal. And they're going to be the ones. They'll know they started this financial dynasty. And that is just a remarkable feeling. So just a wonderful episode. Thank you so much to Talat for coming on. And yeah, this is a fun one.
If you got value from today's episode, if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second and press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. Just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. If you want to support us and what we're doing here at Choose FI, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. To do that, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to choosefi.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of FI, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free and just go to choosefi.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 100. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.